We made it to podcast two. Jason, you are on East Coast time. I'm on Mountain time. Jeff is on Pacific time. And my equipment sucks today. So, but we'll get through it.
It must be on Greenwich Mean Time.
It could be. It could be. But we'll get through it. Obviously, there's a lot to talk about since the last time we were on together. There's last night's blowout. There's the All-Star game. There's the draft coming up. Which one of those do you guys want to tackle first?
Yes. So maybe just as a recap, since last we spoke, I think it was a few days before the Yankee series, because I did mention I was heading to the game, the first of three games against the Yankee at Yankee Stadium, which I did go to. They did not cancel that game until 2 hours after I was sitting in the ring in Yankee Stadium. Had a great night with my kids. We just didn't get to see any baseball. But, you know, broadly, as a recap, since that time, listen, they took two series against two winning teams in a row. And I'm a big picture kind of guy, so I felt good about that. In order to continue that trend, they need three out of four from Pittsburgh going into the break. And, you know, if last night is an indicator of the likelihood of that, that sounds like it's an achievable task. And, you know, they go into the break, you know, at that point, they would be just about 10 games over 500 and optimistic for the second half. So, you know, there's lots always to pick on, but, you know, sort of taking the 30,000 foot view since our last podcast, I'm a reasonably content Met fan week or 10 days in from our last podcast.
Yeah, nobody's a bigger Mets fan than me, and I think that those true believers and those true Mets lovers are the ones who are going to wind up sounding the most critical on a quotidian basis. So, so I shouldn't even apologize for that. But I'm not even sure when the last time it was, because now we know for certain that no matter what happens this weekend, the Mets are going to wind up at the All-Star break in first place. I'd like to know when the last time that happened. So that's cause for great optimism. Now, as you said, Jason, I mean, they recently, you know, won two series over tough, over tough competitors or over tough teams. But again, as we know from years past against teams like the Miami Marlins, this seven-game ersatz series broken up by the All-Star break with Pittsburgh. I mean, it's easier said than done, but the team should sweep those seven games just to put an exclamation point.
You actually said that out loud. You know that, right?
Yeah. Well, but again, you brought up last night's game. Obviously, it was not hit-wise, because I think, what was it? We only had 13 hits or something like that last night, or 12
right.
or 13 hits.
As but many not hit-wise, hits as runs. Right.
Yeah, power-wise, it was impressive.
Yeah, one was a grand slam, their first grand slam of the year, and then the other was a three-run home.
Yeah, it was arguably the weakest grand slam homer I've ever seen.
Well, it went over the wall.
not quite over the wall. At the time, you know.
Well, it went into the wall, maybe.
It hung at the top of the wall until somebody came mercifully and grabbed the baseball. But again, we're looking. You know, it happened that we had our greatest power output of arguably greatest power output of the season on the same night that Ohtani hits his 33 home run, I think, 1,000 feet out of the stadium or something. Did you see that, Jason? Mark, did you see that home run?
I did not.
I did not. I didn't actually get to see the Met game either, so I'm catching up on all the highlights.
Did you see the home run?
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, for me, the Met highlight last night wasn't Lindor's barely grand slam. It wasn't Alonso's three-run homer. It was VR's two home runs, because coming out of the IL, he had been just, I mean, it was his worst 2 weeks of the season. I mean, he was going nowhere fast, having been restored to the team, to the lineup. And all of a sudden, he woke up last night, and in a big, big way.
Yeah. You know, one of the other takeaways for me in the last couple of weeks, you know, happened against the Yankees, happened against the Brewers as well, is the Mets coming from behind to win. In the first couple of months of the season, it was, you know, eke out a run or two and rely totally on pitching to hold on as best you can to get a W. They really hadn't come back, and you know, because the hitting hadn't been there, and started to see that in the last two series. And you know, I don't know if that trend is a trend or just an anomaly, but it also coincided, you know, with getting guys off the DL and IL, I guess, be proper about it.
Yeah, I still fall back on that DL.
Yeah. Correct me anytime I say that, but yeah, coming from behind, getting hits with runners on scoring positions when you're down, I hadn't seen that before. So you know, I am an optimist. You have to be a lifelong Met fan, and so I take some excitement about the second half from the last 10 days. You know, for me, the pain points for me that I see no signs of life in Conforto.
What do you think of that? I mean, again, you know, like VR, he came off the IL and has been, frankly, dismal. Not so defensively, he's still been impressive.
He's punching well and defensively, which we didn't really expect. You know, hitting above his weight, if you will. But listen, he didn't hit before he got hurt. He hasn't hit since he's come back. You know, the team's still winning. So if he, it's his walk year. I mean, all the stars would point to he should be able to get into some sort of a groove, but has made literally zero contribution. And McNeil only slightly better you know, in the last six games. You know, he's had actually his first walk-off hit in his career. So he's a young guy, but you know, so maybe a little sign of life there, but truly nothing out of Conforto.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about I agree with you about McNeil, but the last two seasons, I mean, we have to consider last year a season of sorts, no matter what it was. The last two seasons, you know, his batting average was .317. You know, Conforto's wasn't .317. The one other thing we haven't mentioned in a positive way yet, holy moly, what about Nimmo coming off the IL?
Very nice. Yeah.
You know, and that, and he was gone for 2 months, and he hit the ground running.
Right.
First literally game back. And figuratively.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
The three things that I'm most concerned about, I think, well, one we can't do anything about, and I'm a naysayer. I think I'm in a very small minority opinion on this, but I still think our manager doesn't know how to play baseball. That's number one. But the other things are. And again, they're related to Diaz, which is that what is the obsession with Miguel Castro? He consistently has performed poorly every time he comes in.
Well, you know, I was going to mention that because I was reading something last night or yesterday about both Castro and Stroman, their declines 100% coinciding with the checking of sticky substances on June 21st.
Since that date,
both of them fell off the cliff.
Interesting.
Yeah. You might be seeing that.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other thing, and again, this is a managerial issue too, although it's the people that are playing the game you ultimately have to rely on, the people on the field. But once again, I believe it is more than a bizarre coincidence. How many days ago was it? It was 2, 3, 4 days ago. Again, he throws Diaz in there in a non-save situation. And I said Diaz before I meant Rojas. Diaz in there in a non-save situation in a tie game in late innings, and he blows, you know, the tie. Wasn't it a tie or?
I remember the game, and I remember actually you mentioning that on our last podcast that, you know, never, ever, 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 ever put Diaz in anything other than
a safe situation.
And since our podcast, yeah, he blew it. I actually think they won that game, but he blew the save.
Right. And in fact, I think he got the win.
He got the win. Exactly. That's right.
That's not a reliever getting a win is not something to shine a beacon on, I don't believe.
Yeah.
So you mentioned somebody mentioned youth with the draft coming tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow. They have the 10th pick overall.
10 and then not until 46, I think.
And this draft, I think last year's was the shortest number of rounds ever. This one is, I think it's going to be 20 rounds. Usually they're 40 rounds, but it's still, you know, it's a healthy draft and they have a high pick. Just a fun fact, last time the Mets had a number 10 pick, it was Conforto.
Yeah, well, that's the interesting thing. I know very little about the baseball draft because every time I do read about it or hear statistically, historically something about it, there are more number one baseball drafts who falter, who fail on the field, and the big stars are the ones who are drafted 32. You know, I don't think that the people making these draft picks I don't think they're well informed, or I don't think they're, you know, it's, I suppose that from high school and college, you still don't know who's going to mature into a great baseball player and what is the most challenging and arguably the most difficult professional sports game there is.
So if I throw a couple of names out there, Jeff, you're not going to have much of an opinion, but, There are a couple of high school players, from what I can see, that they may be looking at. Colson Montgomery and Brady House are two names that I've seen come up several times, along with Matt McLean at UCLA, Sal Frelick at Boston College, and Kumar Rocker at Vanderbilt. Those are in a quick overview of what people are talking about. Those five seem to be the ones that come up most often.
Yeah, I too do not follow the draft closely. The Mets have historically not performed really well in the draft, at least from a results perspective. I mean, they've gotten, you know, rated players who haven't always turned out to be, you know, major league material. So, yeah, I claim a bit of ignorance on this particular draft, but I know organizationally they've kind of committed to a different approach to the draft and, a different way of analyzing data. And they've brought in some new resources in their scouting and draft department. So, you know, cross your fingers, hope for the best.
Did they order a dartboard from Amazon this year? Maybe that's the key.
Maybe.
A new dartboard.
Yeah, I'm actually more intrigued about the trade deadline at the end of July than I am about the draft. This team is, I don't want to say they're built for now because they're built for the next couple of years. I would like to, with their lack of offensive production and their complete reliance on pitching and the pitching thinning out a little bit, you know, as we're getting into the dog days of summer, I'd like to see some activity around the trade deadline. I think they do have some trade bait and they certainly have some holes to plug.
Well, that you mentioned two things there, and they kind of are opposing forces. I mean, I agree with you. I think they should be players before the trade deadline, or at the trade deadline. These trades are often made in the last 48 to 72 hours or less. Should they be going after starting pitching, which is what I believe they should be going after, or should they be going after offensive help?
And you have Carrasco coming back. Who knows what he's going to be? You've had a lot of rotation with these two, three inning guys up and down. You know, goodbye Strock, hello Strock, Reed Foley. I mean, you know, it's been a bit of a turnstile with these guys, but they stepped in and they got two outs and they kept a save opportunity alive for Diaz. So I think starting pitching. Peterson's going to be out for a while. He was inconsistent before he went down. Walker, of course, looks great. It was nice to see him given the All-Star nod last night. So, Stroman's been inconsistent since they started checking the belts. I think there's a starting pitching hole that we need to fill.
Yeah, I was really surprised. There was an article in the New York Post a few days back talking about how the Mets should be interested in, that the Chicago Cubs are maybe up for a fire sale, in fact, because of their recent losing streak and that they're not players at the All-Star break. But all the people on the Cubs that were assumed might be available were offensive players. They weren't pitchers. And I'm curious why a really imaginative trade, for the dismal, with the dismal Texas Rangers, for a stud pitcher, stud all-star pitcher like Kyle Gibson. Why is it only, these trades are often, well, we're going to pick up this great player because he's in his walk year. Well, that's fine, but why don't you go after somebody who isn't in his walk year? As you said a few moments ago, we have trade bait.
Yeah.
The thing that I keep questioning is, do we trade either or not at all? Dom Smith or Pete Alonso?
Yeah, boy. Alonso is definitely warming up, which on our last podcast, she threw out the idea of using Alonso and moving Smith to first base, which I hadn't thought of before our discussion, and since that time, both of them have been playing quite well. So I don't That's what you need. If you want to do a big deal, you need a big name. So I do think we have that. I mean, they're talking about Adam Frazier, bringing him in, moving McNeil the third. I don't know how that really helps us.
We're going to move McNeil to third. What are we going to do with J.D. Davis?
Exactly. So, one of those three guys have to be traded for a starting pitcher if you're going to do something along those lines.
Exactly. Otani notwithstanding, it's still a game about pitching.
Yeah.
So I think that's more of a valuable resource than a guy who seems to thrive when All-Star game home run derby pitchers are throwing 60-mile-an-hour fastballs at him. I thrilled to watch, as we did last night, Alonso hit opposite field three-run home runs, but I find him scarily inconsistent and all too often going after pitches way out of the strike zone and taking first ball pitches right down the middle. So, he's got potential, sure, but let another team, benefit by that potential or flounder. I want an all-star. I want another all-star pitcher. You mentioned Carrasco. This guy hasn't pitched for the Mets.
He has not pitched for the Mets ever.
So we may be looking at somebody. We may be looking at a decent pitcher. We may not be looking at a decent pitcher. Syndergaard, now they're hoping he's a September call-up. Obviously, the guy's going to have no impact on the team until next year at the earliest. We need a pitcher. We need a stud starting pitcher more. And we've got two theoretically stud first baseman. It's true that Dom Smith defensively is a better first baseman than Alonso, but he's also a decent outfielder. He's a defensive outfielder. So, you know, that's a sacrifice, right? Personally, I keep Dom Smith. I think he's more of a multi-tool player.
My guess is Cone's going to keep them both. That's my guess. But yeah, listen, if there was the right player out there, and it would fill in a missing piece this season, I would put either one of them out there. Listen, maybe in wrapping this week up, you know, I kind of looked ahead and, you know, the Mets had a really soft schedule in the first half of the season. And so that they're going into the break in first place, comfortably in first place, you know, all good. It would certainly, we'd have a much bleaker outlook if they were not in first place, given the softness of their schedule. But when you look at September, which is where I was looking ahead to, you know, all kinds of good things or bad things can happen. They've got a pretty tough schedule to end the year. They're playing both Boston and the Yankees and Milwaukee and St. Louis all in the month of September. They've got to get healthy and fill in for some of these missing pieces here, you know, over the next 2-3 weeks, I think. Davis is an unknown. Carrasco is an unknown. Syndergaard's not going to matter. They've got to trade for the playoffs and September, and you know that's kind of my hope here over the next couple of weeks. Get through the All-Star break, do what you're supposed to do against Pittsburgh, and put a deal together. Get some pitching out there.
Yeah. I'd like to, but remember, I think it was I don't know who it was. Maybe it was our manager again who talked about the fact that, you know, who opined that games were not important until September. I think games in April are equally important. I think the games they're playing right now are critically important. Right now we've got, is it still, what, a 4.5 game lead? Not sure what happened after Washington lost last night, but Atlanta keeps winning. We have 4.5 game lead. Think, you know, just fantasize about getting into the All-Star break with a 6-game lead. I think it makes a difference. It makes a big difference. So we've got, you know, that make-believe double header. I say that because they're 7-inning games, not 9-inning games. One of the most salient and savvy, you know, he can be very snarky, Gary Cohn, but he's also arguably the best color man in baseball broadcasting right now. I mean, his elephantine memory for our arcane people, places, and things is amazing. But he said sometime last week, because of our endless series of doubleheaders, 7-inning doubleheaders, there was a game that was rescheduled as a day-night doubleheader about a week ago.
The Yankee game, yeah. That was the one I was supposed to be at, yep.
And he said, on air, and it was, you know, he said, you know, a lot of ticket holders bought tickets for that night game weeks ago, months ago. And they bought tickets to a 9-inning game.
Yep.
Shouldn't they all receive a 22% rebate on their ticket price?
Yeah, and interestingly, that was also an ESPN nationally broadcast game. So not only did the ticket holders get ripped off, ESPN got ripped off.
Yes, right. Which is a curious thing, and I'm not even sure why this happens. But sometimes when ESPN broadcasts Met games, they are simulcast on, or not simulcast, but they're also broadcast on SNY, and sometimes they're not.
Yeah.
Or is it just the Sunday night games are not? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, but it is an interesting concept. I'm wondering if, you know, they've got to do some make good because ESPN's getting less revenue than they paid for.
Yeah, it's ticket buyers as well as the television network.
Yeah,
yes,
I don't think absolutely. We need to cry for ESPN. Is anybody pro All-Star game on this podcast, or is it a relic that needs to be cut away And
oh, I don't think it's a relic. I just think it needs to be rescheduled for after the World Series.
Yeah, I've gone to one All-Star game in the last decade or so. That was the probably most enjoyment I ever got from All-Star activities, being at one. It was in Phoenix, 2011. It was a spur of the moment thing. There were tickets available.
That's how poor the Diamondbacks do, huh?
Yeah, that tells you everything you need to know about that. So it was fun to be there in the stands with a bunch of other baseball fans from many different teams. So that was sort of interesting, but beyond that, I tend not to watch it.
Yeah, okay. I think that answers the question.
And, you know, tell me something else. Ever since the Mets removed capacity restrictions at Citi Field, where's the seven line? I don't see them in the outfield anymore. Have they gone away altogether? I like seeing them there.
Yeah, I don't know. Good question.
Speaking of Arizona,
I don't blame them for that.
How do teams like Arizona and Baltimore get out of the dugout every day? That's something I've always wondered.
Yeah. And ironically, they both have beautiful ballparks.
They do.
As Mark pointed out in the beginning, I'm in Pacific time zone. I'm in Las Vegas, and we're just salivating over the, I think, likely possibility that we're going to get a pro baseball team in the next 3 or 4 years, in that Oakland's going to make a decision to move to Las Vegas. And Las Vegas has always been, well, now more than ever, now that its population, its Clark County population, is 2.3 million people. Obviously the Mets AAA team was here for a number of years. The new minor league park that seats 10,000 in Summerlin, Nevada, is absolutely gorgeous. And pre-pandemic was frequently filled to the rafters every single game. So the hunger is here and the money is here. And I don't believe the money will ever, the hunger may be in Oakland, but the money will never be in Oakland. And the fan support, to go to their present ballpark, it will not be there. I don't know. I just think there's a big upside to moving Oakland to Las Vegas. Unfortunately, it means that I only will see the Mets play in Las Vegas once every, 7 years?
Unless they're both in the World Series. So
right.
Well, right. You were very prescient moving out there ahead of all these sports teams getting there.
I know. We're going to, I guess basketball doesn't need to move here. I don't know. It's just a matter of time, I think. And again, the fan support for hockey was here from day one. Football is largely untested. It's not untested. Even last year during the pandemic year, before the pandemic hit, all the seats at the stadium were sold out.
Yeah.
So, we'll see.
So somebody mentioned the Braves, but looking forward, Braves, Phillies, Nationals. Who are you guys most concerned about?
Yeah, for me, it's always the Braves. You know,
I completely agree. Completely.
As a Met fan, it can only be the Braves. they've broken our hearts way too many times.
Completely agree. They're not the big free agent signing. I mean, they have this uncanny ability to discover raw talent or nurture raw talent, bring it up through their minor league system. And even managerially, they're always impressive. After Bobby Cox left the team, they just replaced him with another great manager. So pitching coaches as well.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
Washington, is a much more transactional type of a ball club. Not like the Braves in terms of the organization. So, they could put together a really good team here and there, but the Braves grow those teams.
Yeah,
and they're always a danger. And this particular team, if they get good pitching in the second half, they're going to be tough because they're hitting the hell out of the ball.
Which is why our focus in the trade by the trade deadline should be starting pitching, not position players.
Okay. So we've got, Jeff has called the coming week a Pittsburgh sweep. So that's great. I you know, no other outcome possible, obviously.
Well,
and
that would be nice. I take series wins because series wins broadly give you, you know, a 666 or so average over the course of a season, and you know, that usually puts you into the World Series. So I'll take Jeff's prediction, but as a fallback, just keep winning these series, 2 out of 3, 3 out of 4. I'm okay with that.
Jeff.
And hope that Atlanta does not follow suit.
Exactly.
Yeah, Jeff also gets this episode's alliteration award with his earlier salient, savvy, snarky comment. And
thank you. Thank you. I accept with humble gratitude.
You won it, fair and square. Anything that you guys want to touch on before we call it a podcast?
No, I just to me, let's enjoy the next three games and then, you know, take a much needed break here and get right back up on that horse and move to the trade deadline with purpose. And I'm feeling pretty good as a Met fan, and you know, to be July 10th and still be able to say that is that's a thing. So that's a good thing.
And this is my favorite, one of my favorite weekends of the year. I get to watch the Wimbledon finals, and I get to watch one 9-inning Mets game and 2 7-inning Mets games, all in the same weekend.
Okay, guys. Thanks for getting together, and we'll do it again real soon.
Yeah, thanks, okay. Mark, for all putting it together. And Jeff, enjoy your big sports weekend.
Okay, Jason. All right, Mark. All right. Take care, guys.
See you, fellas.
Be good. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.